Now, to show our gratitude, we're not going to be like the other guys and jerk you around and bullshit you. We're going to tell you the truth.
Shane Douglas is the man who ignites the new flame of the sport of professional wrestling. The era of the franchise. The era of the ECW.
Welcome to the most extreme menage a trois violence you'll ever experience here at the Extreme Three-Way Dance Podcast. I am JT. Joining me, as always, on the show are my co-hosts. That is Jennifer Smith and John D'Amato. How are you guys both doing?
Doing good. How are you doing, Justin?
Oh, I'm doing well. I'm doing well. Mm-hmm. Johnny?
Wonderful. No Monday blues here.
Very good. No Gloria in your house?
No.
Glory holes, maybe.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. This is a brand new episode of the Extreme Three-Way Dance, like I mentioned. If you're checking this out, you found us on the North South Connection Podcast Network, a brand new feed hosted by myself and my friend Chad Campbell. And on this feed, you'll find such great shows as Wrestling Warzone, a Monday Night Wars podcast retrospective, Jeff Learns Wrestling, No Holds Barred, and this show, plus other cool little pod blasts and GWCW project related items and whatever else comes along the way. So thank you for joining us. Hopefully you subscribe to one of your podcatcher apps and you'll join us on this journey. If you are new to this show, we started our journey of Extreme through the history of ECW in February 1994, the first set of episodes through November to Remember, available at the PlayStation Wrestling feed before we have shifted over here. So if you haven't listened, go back and check it out. If you're new, if you're old, welcome. All aboard this ride. So on our last episode, we did recap November to Remember. 1994 was a hot one. We really all enjoyed it quite a bit. We had the awesome Sandman fake retirement. We had a very good, interesting main event with, I guess, technically Scorpio and Chris Benoit, but before that was supposed to be Chris Benoit and Sabu. Mm-hmm. That ended in violence and sadness for Sabu's neck. So we'll find out how things go down there. Before we get started, anything you guys want to cover? Any thoughts coming out of November to Remember?
I'm looking for Joey to be a little bit more on his game tonight, if I'm being honest.
Okay. It's a gauntlet right there. It's a throwdown. Mm-hmm. Johnny, any thoughts coming out of November to Remember?
I'm just psyched for the continuation of Wherever Dreamer and Sandman goes. That was an epic ceremony, and I just can't wait to see where it goes from there.
All right, well, we're going to find out maybe quickly here because we do start things off on the November 8th, 1994 edition of Hardcore Television. We open with the full Tommy Dreamer Cairo match and Sandman retirement ceremony from November to Remember. We're not going to re-recap it here. Again, you can go back and listen to our last episode if you want to check it out. Tommy Dreamer, though, is then backstage. He's all torn up. His back is torn up, that is. He says, mm-hmm. Some call it sports entertainment, but then you get extreme. He won't ever forget what happened in November to Remember. It took him a long time to get here. And now that things got extreme, it's been proven on his back. Sandman wasted a lot of people's times, including the fans. He wants to be part of ECW and then shows us his fucked up mouth from the cane beating. Sandman lifted any guilt off from the attack, and he ain't crying, and he'll never quit. ECW fans are his friends. They took care of Sandman, and then they ended up just wasting their time because of what Sandman did. If you mess with his friends, you mess with him, and that's what Sandman did. They're taking it to levels beyond extreme. He may die, but he's going to take Sandman with him. So a lot of emotion pouring out of Tommy Dreamer here after we check out the replay of the match and the segment. Jenny, what did you think of this?
Dude, Tommy Dreamer, very dramatic. Probably his best promo that we've seen. Although we did like the one in his sweatpants and in his mama's basement or some shit last time. So, yeah, I like this. It was great the way he was turned away from the camera and then dramatically stood up and showed his fucked up face.
Like the fucking Joker with that mouth or whatever.
Fuck yeah, it was great. I really liked this a lot.
I loved it. They were smart to emphasize the retirement spectacle and to show it on their main show, mm-hmm. to extend the angle. And also the match too. That was, you know, that's a nice surprise in case somebody was tuning in. They didn't see November to Remember, and they also saw the whole Dream O'Kyra match. And
we saw it from the floor point of view. You know, right. We got a different camera angle than last time.
Yeah, because if you remember too, when we talk about it often, like if you wanted to see November to Remember, you had to be in Philly. And don't mm-hmm. forget yep. now their TV's getting syndicated a little bit more. You know, other areas and affiliates are picking it up, and even people in Philly that couldn't get there. They'd have no way to see this. So it was a real treat for them to show this full thing. And it's important for them, too, to keep the interest and the heat burning on TV. Because if you don't show this, you're going to like wake up and be like, all right, what's going on? Because last mm-hmm. you knew, Sandman was retiring because he was blinded. So they kind of almost they were kind of put in a position where they had to.
They did. They pumped on the old VCRs, which will come out like whatever, like, you know, weeks or a month later.
Right.
They would. That would be the only way to see it. And but still, to pump video sales, to, you know, to show something like this, this is something like you'd want like to have on tape. The mm-hmm. whole the retirement spectacle. It's an epic moment in history. And I love Dreamer's promo showing off the welts and everything, and also his line of suffering builds character, which is mm-hmm. something I can relate to. A lot of suffering this week, trying to accommodate some recreation activities.
Oh.
We're inside the Eagle's Nest where Joey Styles welcomes us in, tells us on November 19th, Tommy gets his shot at Sandman, and special guest referee, Tommy Cairo, who has a Singapore cane in hand to keep order in the ring. So
this is going to go well, I'm telling you.
Oh, Tommy Cairo, one of our favorites here on the three-way dance.
Money, what's your bet on Peach's run-in? All right.
I think Peach is, I don't know. If I'm her, I don't think I show my face again after that.
I don't know. Woman talked some shit later in this episode. So
that's true.
Just saying, Peaches might feel called out.
I mean, Sandman did call her basically a fat hag while he was blind. Yeah. I don't care how much weight you put on. the most iconic moment, perhaps, of November to Remember. So, speaking of woman, she's backstage with Sandman. They're smug. They're chuckling. They pulled off their grand plan. They got Dreamer to take care of Cairo and then took out Peaches during the fracas as well. Woman mocks Tommy basically for being a pussy and then blows a kiss his way. They also mock the fans that all fell for this ruse. This was good. Woman's basically giving credit to herself for this whole plan, giving the old, I called it pat in the back, but here she is taking full credit for everything they executed, pulling one over on Tommy Dreamer, getting revenge on Tommy Cairo, and fucking with the fans all at once. Johnny, did you enjoy this, the way Woman played this?
Of course, the up and smoke promo, I'll call it, because woman brought the smoke, and Sandman too. They both brought the smoke.
An amazing visual with her on the mic, and then him just lighting one cigarette after another and just laughing like through the entire promo, and she's just running her mouth. I mean, it was all right. I have a little bit more respect for Woman now. She's stepping it up. She's truly showing that she is the mastermind behind all this, and I kind of love it.
And I'm so happy they kept them together too. Yeah. With the tease of Sandman, I mean, Woman was going to have someone new with Sandman being sidelined, everything else. Like, they're just perfect together. So I'm happy that was all part of the ruse as well, and we weren't going to get another swerve, because I mean, she had just left Sullivan not that long ago for Sandman. Like, mm-hmm. we didn't need another her going elsewhere. This is such a perfect pairing that's really elevated Sandman completely into this really great iconic role that he's got going on right now. So I think it would have been a bad play to split them up. So I'm happy that they're still together.
Oh, they're hot.
All right, we go back to Joey, who's not thrilled. He says Tommy goes in there for all of us on November 19th. Remember, Joey is one of the most people really backing Sandman. Talk about how they're all best mm-hmm. friends and everyone loves Sandman and everything else. But now he's
crying, right? You know, outside the hospital.
So he feels betrayed, greatly betrayed, and all the fans will be in Tommy Dreamer's corner on the 19th. Also that night, we get some a pretty good card here. We get the Pitbulls taking on the Bad Breed in a double dog collar match. Sabu and Tasmaniac team up against the Malenkos, Dean and his brother Joe, and Shane Douglas and Steve Austin will take on Ron Simmons and Scorpio. We heard about that one of our last episodes, big dream tag match. We then get two more full matches from November to Remember. We get Mr. Hughes and Scorpio, and Shane Douglas and Ron Simmons. Any further thoughts? Did you guys rewatch those at all? Or did you, I just kind of bust through since we just talked about them. Mm-hmm. Anything new pop for you, John? You're good there.
No, just with the Hughes, the over exaggerated bump before the Scorpio switch.
Yes.
That was it. Yeah.
All right. We then go backstage where Ron Simmons and Scorpio are together. Simmons was raised to fight. He grew up without parents. He gets sent on missions because guys like Douglas, who have to train to fight, are too afraid to do it. He runs through his impressive accolades, including being the first black world champion. Simmons don't just run his mouth. He says his fists do the talking, and they always have. He's a living legend, and Douglas wishes to be where he's been. He's a true franchise, bringing college teams to two Orange Bowls, millions of dollars, plus a Heisman. Scorpio's loving it, puts out the warning sign for the big tag while Simmons keeps ranting. I thought Ron Simmons was amazing here. Like, we talked about him being a little bit shaky leading up to November to Remember and in that match, but I thought he really turned it up a notch, and maybe he just kind of figured out what his character should be here in ECW, and this is the start of a pretty cool run for him. But I really love this, Johnny.
Yeah, great fire, and he pumped up his football accolades and his career. He threw that in with some specifics from Florida State. Great fire. And also when Scorpio was talking too, he'd do that thing where he pumped up his titties and tremendous.
Speaking of titties, I gotta mention Ron Simmons' droopy pecs here.
Tits McGee.
He's getting a little cozy in his role. He made a lot of money in WCW. Well, they weren't really doing that much, you know.
Nice tits, just saying. But I can't decide whether this elevates Scorpio or brings down Simmons, like, because Scorpio is so bad during promos.
Yeah, this minor.
But I also am kind of glad that he is in the situation with Ron, because he can learn something from this. Mm-hmm. And hopefully he does going forward, that he can pick up, like, this promo style that Ron has.
So Scorpio promo is a lot of nothing, and then he just a lot of awkward laughs. and then he'll throw like one good rap line and like, ain't no faking or something, and that's it.
It's definitely this weird nervous laugh. Like, I think it's it's like he doesn't know what to do.
not like that.
No, thankfully.
Just like that.
Oh God. All right, so yeah, I think so. Jane, to your point, I think Simmons is elevating Scorpio. If anything, he's saving him, because on his own, he's been definitely a bit of a train wreck, having to carry these. So I appreciate that they're putting these guys together. They also have history together in WCW. They teamed up, so there's some nice through lines with the two of them. And I think it's, you know, Scorpio can carry Simmons a bit in the ring. Simmons is no slouch, but we haven't seen it yet. And Simmons is kind of, I don't want to say it's like a dad-son kind of thing going on, but I would say it's like a uncle-nephew
relationship. Yeah, I could see the uncle-nephew thing.
He's kind of like the tough uncle hanging out. He's bringing the nephew along. It feels more like that to me.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah. All right, and so that pretty much does it. Joey runs down what's coming up on November 19th and wraps us up. Usually we do awards on the show. I only did a few of the categories tonight. Obviously, we weren't going to do match or moment. Most 90s, I had Scorpio's leather jacket, though. I had a car out, especially.
That thing was hot.
And then for Stock Rising, pretty much everyone we heard from, a Dreamer, Sandman, a Woman, and Simmons.
Yeah, Simmons.
And Joey.
Yeah, Joey. So did he bounce back for you?
He bounced back a little bit. I mean, he brings it a little bit later, but yeah, he's on the good track.
And I didn't have any stock falling. I thought everyone that we saw pretty much showed up tonight.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
All right, well, I did grade this because, you know, people were watching. It was a presentation of an episode. And when you think of everything included here, I went 7 out of 10. Like, if you were just watching this for the first time, if you hadn't seen November Remember, you get the retirement ceremony, you get Dreamer, you get the Overture of Tommy, right? You get Tommy versus Tommy. You get the great Sandman Woman stuff. Plus, then you get the two other big matches for November Remember. So this is a pretty great episode of TV if you were just watching this for the first time.
I have to agree with that. I mean, except for the fact that you've seen some of these matches before, I went 7 out of 10 too.
Yeah, even if you saw November to Remember, you're not disappointed that
right.
that they repeated it, especially the match and the retirement spectacle back to back. That's something that you watch mm-hmm. more than once and you enjoy. So definitely 7.5, sure.
So that's a quick episode here for us tonight. It's great to get to see the specials, but of course one of the downsides is they do fall into this where they repeat a lot of stuff. So for us here, mm-hmm. it'll be a little bit repetitive here and there, but for most people it was exciting. All right, let's move ahead a week. November 15th, 1994, we get our opening animation, and then we get another full match from November. We get the whole Public Enemy versus Mikey Whipwreck and Cactus Jack tag team title match, where Public Enemy regained the ECW tag team titles. We then go backstage where Cactus and Mikey are. They're having a family problem because Mikey won't be healed in time for November 19th. But Mikey has found Cactus a new partner. Cactus says, "No, Mikey, you're my partner, and I'll take on a handicap match instead." He doesn't trust anyone else. But Mikey says his mom told him he can't come home unless Public Enemy are out of wrestling.
That's amazing.
He said he has very little money, and he used it to make a phone call. Someone on Cactus's behalf, and if this guy turns on Cactus, Mikey will kick his ass. And Cactus reveals that partner is the returning Kevin Sullivan, his former WCW tag team partner, former championship partner in WCW as well. They had, of course, been feuding right before this. They broke up over the summer in WCW into the fall, had a loser leaves WCW match, I believe, at Fall Brawl, that Kevin Sullivan beat Cactus Jack. That was the end of Cactus's WCW career before he comes here full time. And so they're bringing Sullivan in as part of this continuing WCW ECW talent partnership they got going on between the two promotions. So Sullivan's coming in, it looks like, to team with Cactus against Public Enemy on November 19th. Jenny, what did you think of this promo?
My boo, Kevin Sullivan.
You excited?
I'm stoked for that. Yeah. Yes, I am. And also, Mikey was fucking hilarious in this. He snaps on Cactus, and he's like, "No!" Just like, he grabs him like he's like serious. He's like, "I can't do this anymore." I was losing it. Like, I love Mikey so much. And Cactus, I love, he just goes with it, you know, like in his like weird ass character. He's just like, okay. Oh, so beautiful.
It's good. Like, it was a good ballsy promo for Mikey too. Like, we've talked about his growth and his evolution as a character, and kind of how far he's come from the timid jobber we saw at the beginning of this journey. And now he's stepping up and saying, "No, I'll kick his ass, Cactus. You don't have to save me. I'll back you up if he turns on you, if he fucks us." So.
But also, my mama said, "I can't wrestle no more."
Yes, of course. So, still like... his mom's.
I love how he got some balls and he went to and he slapped Cactus, but then like he like instantly regretted it, and it was like a gentle slap. He was like, "Uh oh,
don't hurt me, sir."
Yeah,
baby, don't hurt me.
They're such a cute couple, though. I
they
love
are.
Them.
So, yeah, I mean, if yep. we have, like, the uncle and nephew with Simmons
yeah.
and Scorpio,
yeah.
these guys are kind of like, I don't want to say brothers, but it's more like Cactus is, like, a big brother program. Like, Mikey, like, lives in a foster home and or
like, role
home.
Models.
Yeah, right, exactly. And Cactus is kind of bringing him up. Or if he is a brother, maybe he's, like the really older brother that's, like, 10 years older than him, and he's kind of, they're both old enough now to hang out, so they're chilling. He's bringing them up into the world a little bit, you know.
I like it.
I was going to give a Jesse Pinkman comp, but they didn't really get along, him and his brother, even though the age difference is there. Although he just kind of take care of him, right, John?
Yeah.
Public Enemy's backstage, talking about recent events. Rocco Rock tells Sabu to stay out of their business, mocks him for getting taken out of a stretcher. They shit-talk Mikey and brag on being two-time champions. Rock says Kevin Sullivan got fat on that Turner contract, and he'll be wrong in all the wrong place at the wrong time, but he better make sure he makes it to Philly, and they can beat the two men they already beat for their two title reigns. They get intense, and they're the difference between pro wrestling and life. They give a strong warning to Jack, Sullivan, and Mikey, and as usual, I thought this was strong Public Enemy stuff, and I like the callback kind of relating that they beat Cactus for the second titles, but they beat Sullivan for the first ones, right? Because then they beat mm-hmm. him and was it Hugh? No, who was his? Who was Sullivan's part? Oh, Tasmaniac, right? They were champions mm-hmm. earlier, and they're probably going to beat them. So that was kind of their point here. We've already beaten Sullivan once. We've already beaten Jack once for titles. Now we'll beat them both. Jenny, did you dig this one?
I did. You know, I I said before that they have two different types of promos. This was sort of like a mixture between a little bit of the comedy and then towards the end, more intense. And they actually like were wearing like decent shirts and looked fairly put together.
Yep.
So it was good. And then they did this weird like effect on the video as well. It was like a picture in picture type deal. Mm-hmm. So trying up some different production styles here. But I liked it a lot.
Yeah, they had their Vato flannels. Very impressive, and also how they slayed like three different guys within 2 minutes. They put down Sabu, Mikey, and Sullivan all at once, and got that point across. And also they're running out of names for the big shows. They're trying to pump like Experience the Difference for this 11/19. So they keep repeating that.
And they always do hammer it home. It almost. They do it smoothly, but they also do it very heavy-handed sometimes, like where they work it into the promos.
Shoehorn it in, shoehorn sometimes, sure.
No rap lyrics here, Johnny? I don't think there was any, right? No reference?
No.
Joey is back up in his home with Paulie.
There you go.
Eagle's Nest. They discuss the incident between Sabu and Rock a Rock in November to Remember. Paul says Rock has been a thief his whole life, stealing since he was 9. Now he's moved up in the world, gone from stealing gum and purses to stealing Sabu's gimmick. Rock is a member of Public Enemy, steals for a reason. Public Enemy doesn't belong in wrestling and have to change the rules to stick around. On November 19th, the Public Enemy has something to prove. Come down to the ring. They can find him there, and they can bring any wussies from any promotion in the world to get a piece too. Joey asks Paul if Sabu will be there, and Paul says, right. He'll be home watching WCW Saturday night, sarcastically. Joey says Sabu broke his neck against Chris Benoit, but Paul says if you watch in slow motion, Sabu landed on his head at an angle where all of his weight caved in on his body. We get those slow-mo clips as he's ranting. Ugh. Paul issues a challenge to Benoit if he wants to further prove himself as well. If Jason thinks he can outsmart Paul as well, forget it. When Jason was losing matches, Paul was making a star of himself. He asked if WCW would even hire Taz or Sabu after they paid Hulk Hogan big money because they wouldn't want to risk him getting hurt. And WWF wouldn't hire them either because they're too risky to lose money on Bret Hart merchandise. ECW is where you fight to make a living, and after November 19th, Joe and Dean Malenko can go to Japan or Florida, and Sabu and Taz will only fight here. Really great stuff. I probably didn't explain it as well as what he was trying to get across, but basically, this is a life or death for Sabu and Taz. They got nowhere else to go. No one wants them because they're too dangerous. So they have no home but here. These other guys can go around the world and wrestle other places, and that's what makes Sabu and Taz dangerous because this is all they got. So I thought this was really good stuff from Heyman and basically saying Sabu is going to be there even though we just saw him break his neck like a week ago. He's saying he'll be on November 19th, Johnny.
Yeah, I love Paul putting down Rocco saying he's been a thief all his life and now he's trying to steal Sabu's gimmick. And that gruesome slow-mo. They made something out of a bad situation with the botch. But thankfully he's okay. And now they could play off it.
All right. So we've been watching Paulie promos for what? Like almost a year, right? In this timeline. And, I've loved them. They were like awesome. You know, we've always talked about how great he is and everything. I think that this is the first promo that I was sexually aroused by Paulie. So I'm just going to go on the record as I would probably fuck 1994 Paulie dangerously.
Even with that hair?
Yeah, I don't care. He was like super hot, super smoking hot in this promo.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
And then
should we keep the Jenny fuck list on the show? Is that where she started?
Yes, please do.
Okay, so 94 Paul Heyman on the list.
There, yeah. And that slow mo, oh fuck. That was hot too. Whatever. I'll probably fuck Sabu at this point.
So for those keeping score at home, bald spot, ponytail, bad like 2 or 3 days growth,
it's more about the intensity and like the smoothness, you know, the way that he talks so confident that's what's won me over, not necessarily the way he looks, although I do enjoy his beard that he's got rocking there, but and that sweet ass jacket. I mean, that's probably what started it. Sweet-ass jacket it is.
It's the confidence. So work on your spit game, guys.
Right.
And your mullet.
And your yes, and carry a phone with you.
Giant phone.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Joey then narrates highlights of... no, sorry. Jumped ahead there. Sorry about that. Where are we at?
Sandman and Woman.
Sandman and Woman. I threw you all off there, didn't
you
I?
You did. I was trying to think of what I was going to do for a promo coming out of here. All right. Sandman and Woman are backstage. Sandman's laughing about the November 19th match, wondering what Tommy Cairo is going to do with that cane that night. Woman says it's time for Dreamer, Cairo, and Peaches to Johnny. Experience the difference.
Experience the difference. Yes.
Any comments on this one?
It was good. Then they go into this emo Sandman video that I thought was a little bit over the top, but
I don't understand the stipulations though. Like Cairo is going to be just carrying the cane, and like who does he give it to?
I think he can just use it
to keep
them in action, like to keep them under control basically. So if he feels like one of them's getting out of line, he can whap him with the cane.
Yeah, it's gonna go really well, you guys.
Whatever it is, I'm all in with these three.
Right.
I'm all in.
I wish they still were fighting today, the three of these guys, in some kind of.
I know, right? Yeah.
Those promotions still run like Terry Funk and Dusty Rhodes out there in 2009 or whatever. Like, why can't there be some promotion that every 3 years brings Tommy Cairo, Dreamer, and Sandman together?
Well, didn't you see that clip that John showed us of Sandman?
Oh boy!
Yeah, but there's no Cairo there. I don't need to just see Sandman. Like,
I don't know if
doing?
He can handle any kind of angle.
Impact
you know
doing
this
shit. They got Dreamers there half the time, and they got nothing else going on. Bring in Sandman and bring in Cairo, damn it.
Impact, yeah.
That dude can barely stand up anymore.
Someone besides Nate would watch it if they did that. All right, we get that black and white music video, that emo one that you mentioned, Jenny. So then we head back to the nest, where Joey's hyping up November 19th. We get highlights of the build, the Scorpio and Simmons versus Douglas and Austin match. And then we go backstage again with uncle and nephew, Ron Simmons and Scorpio. Scorp does his usual rambling without much of a point. And then we kick into gear when Simmons says he slapped many punks, and Sherry just may be the first woman he hits. He compares Douglas and Austin to frat boys, talks about being raised in the ghetto, how guys like Douglas and Austin are afraid of drive-bys in the streets. Simmons was raised to fight. They can bring Sherry and Doer up nice. Simmons will slap all three of them until the next century. Scorpio says, this ain't WCW, it's Extreme. And Simmons says, I'm Extreme. He's eaten punks like this for breakfast before. It shows in the record books, and he'll do it again on Saturday. Scorp rambles some more. Simmons is all fired up, and he gets beeped as he talks about kicking ass as a first world champion, first black world champion. Simmons has been just amazing in this. Scorpio's lucky he's got him, like we mentioned in the last episode. But he's really lucky Simmons is carrying him here, because he is just on fire. He tapped into something. I don't know if he's been harboring this or has been building or what Paul said to him to unleash him, but he has really just like turned it up a notch here, John. And he's been awesome.
This is very 1994. I think Simmons admitted to bragging about slapping many a woman to put him in place. Little rough, but yeah, definitely. And I love when he said, "What taking you to places in the hood that you're scared to drive to?" That was tremendous too.
I like this, but I do not enjoy the Sherry slander. Thank you very much, and I will not have any of it with your floppy pec muscles, sir. But yes, also that was awesome.
I'm Extreme. Like he just cuts off Scorpio as he's chuckling through
his
promo.
Yeah, he like tries to let him talk, but then he's like, "You suck. Let me take over this shit."
He didn't even let him get his woot. There it is.
We don't need that. That shit. No, he's like, I don't know what happened to him, but he figured it out. Something happened. Something clicked for him.
He had to fight Shane, and he got pissed off. That's right? Probably what happened.
He might have maybe watched that and was like embarrassed, and was like, "I'm better than this." And I don't know. Something happened. Paul stoked him, or something. Was like, "Dude, you're better than this. Like, tap into whatever's been pissing you off the past however many years." And he hit it.
A bump of coke and probably filled him right up.
He is on fire. We get clips of Paul and 911 destroying that guitar player and the announcers back from November to Remember. And we get a hard sell for Saturday, as well as the big card in Jim Thorpe, Pennsylvania on Friday night. John, you ever been to Jim Thorpe, Pennsylvania?
No, sir.
Sounds like the next PTVN meetup maybe there.
Sure.
Shane Douglas is backstage. He talks himself up, says this week he steps another rung of the ladder toward being the greatest of all time. He faces the greatest competition in wrestling this weekend. His partner is the only man he respects in that joke of a company with a stupid corporate structure. As Steve Austin ventures into Philadelphia, walks the aisle with the franchise and his manager, Sherry, who's done well with that old piece of crap. He says Simmons and Scorpio are proven. They're at the top of the ladder, putting over their credentials. He says Austin was the strong link of the Hollywood Blondes, someone he warred with in the past, and Austin was all in for this match. This Saturday, they find out and take notice of the tag team of the decade, and they can face any competition. On November 19th, they're the greatest tag team in a one-time event and speaks to their talent and the job Sherry will do both before, during, and after the match. So basically saying she's going to bang them both, I think. So good for her. This is solid Shane stuff. I know you guys have been very critical of the way Shane has behaved in these promos, specifically with talking about Flair and others in WCW and WWF. Do you think he reined it in more here, Jenny?
No, I think he is making himself look even more stupid.
Oh, boy.
Because he had to cheat to win the last time. Also, he has name-checked everybody. And then, oh, God, now all of a sudden Steve Austin is great. He's, like, the best. He's, like, one of my, you know, I'm just like, what? Either you hate everybody over there or you don't. Like, what? What is your deal? He sounds delusional to me. Like, he's losing his mind.
But, I mean, doesn't that still work as a heel character? Even if, like, we were interpreting differently how he's handling this, like, I see it more as he's trying to be the franchise of this company. And to do that, he's trying to prove they're the best and everyone else is afraid and old and washed up. You're taking it as he's, like, this delusional madman who thinks he's the best in the world. And he's not because his matches haven't proven it. But doesn't that both work for this heel character?
I guess so. I don't know. I guess... I guess I just didn't want that. You know, I don't know what I wanted, but you're right. This does sound like some shit that I would probably like, but I don't know why. I mean, he's good at what he's doing. It's just, there's something that's not clicking with me.
I thought you'd be more be on board with this because he was pumping up Sherry's return and how important she is to him. So.
Yeah, but also I feel like he's delusional in that area as well because Sherry's been with Ric Flair, so
yeah. Now she's gonna get a younger version of him. No, I mean I don't think he's delusional with Sherry. I think he's like we talked about. I think he's like desperate in love, like Stifler's mom with Shipwreck.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's this is the one that got away from him and this old MILF that broke him in. Like that's how I take it with her and him.
Yeah,
like he can't find what she gave him before. What do you think, John? Anything else on this one?
Nothing else. No, I just emphasize how he was pumping up Sherry's return.
All right. Awards again. I just went with I skipped the first three. And that does wrap up the show, by the way, Douglas. So I skipped those first three awards. We didn't really have anything fresh. But why don't we go ahead and do our most 90s? I had a couple here. Scorpio's leather jacket, yet again, rears its head.
Yep.
And Simmons admitting to wanting to hit a woman. I thought that was extremely 90s. Yeah.
Bragging about slapping anyone.
Very 90s.
Public Enemy's the flannels, the flannel thug
yes.
gear.
And Shane's gold chains. He had like three of them on.
There you go. Very 90s episode here for as little new content as we got. Rising, Public Enemy, Paul, Simmons, and Douglas for me.
Oh, Rising for Paul, for sure.
You're Rising for him.
Hey, Public Enemy.
Stock falling. I went with Scorpio here because, like, next to maybe it is backfiring, Jenny. Because next to Simmons, all of a sudden, it's like, man, this guy is lacking a bit. I mean,
that's
Simmons,
what I was thinking. Yeah. Like, is it good or bad? I don't know.
I don't think it hurts Simmons at all, but I don't. It does make Scorpio look out of his depth.
Yeah.
They're recognizing his weak promo ability early. They gave Simmons, like, out of the 5 minutes, they gave Simmons, like, 4.5 of those minutes.
Smart.
Yeah. Well,
that's Heyman, right? Accentuate the positives, hide the negatives. So he's got Scorpio giggling in the corner while Simmons cuts the promos of his life.
Woot, there it is.
And Simmons, I mean, you know, he's a Hall of Fame, he's an all-timer, and he's always been a great promo guy. But these, and we'll see more coming up, but may be the best of his career. Like, I mean, he was solid in WCW. He's got some good stuff as Farouk later. But, man, this stuff is, like, on fire. Like, this is some of the best stuff I've ever seen out of him. And it's crazy to me because after those first couple, I was ready to be done with him. I'm like, all right, let's just get the fuck past the river and remember. So we can move on to the next, you know, old guy coming in to fight Douglas. But
well, he was limited in WCW. Like, he couldn't brag about, you know, slapping many a woman.
Right, right.
On TBS, you know.
Well, you could if it was Bill Watts.
Like, show his tits on TV just like he does here. So
when Bill Watts was there, it's no shock that that's when Simmons was at his best because he didn't give a shit about any of that. But. All right, so I thought this was a little step back from last episode, only because we didn't get the great November Remember content, but I thought the fresh stuff we got was very good. But at the end of the day, I thought it was a down-the-middle episode, so I went with a 5 out of 10.
Yeah, five and a half.
Well, my poly lust put me to six out of ten.
Went to a full six. Six inches.
Full six.
Full
exactly.
Six for Paul.
Oh, my gosh.
I prefer eight, but.
Good luck. A soggy six. A soggy.
A sloppy, flaccid six.
Oh, boy.
All right. We got one more episode.
Missed me with that also.
One more episode tonight for us, just a three banger tonight, and that is the November 22nd, 1994, and it is our first now post the 11/19 special event at the ECW Arena. So we're gonna get some live stuff here that we haven't seen. We open with a brief slate hyping Saturday Night's Experience the Difference from a couple nights ago. Joey welcomes us in, and we get right to the action as Hack Myers the Shah teams with Chad Austin, taking on Steven Richards and JT Smith. This is apparently a dream partner match. I don't know whose dream is who in this thing. I can't imagine either of these guys picking anyone else in this match as a dream partner. It's like me picking you, John, as a dream podcast partner. You know, it's like I just do the shit all the time. It's like, really? That's a big dream right there. We get a usual opening match slot for the Shah. And of course, we get the partner. Shah gets a good pop. Richards reels his partner, JT Smith. Joey says they found a tiny crevice to broadcast in because the Nest has been sold out for seating tonight. So he's out in the corner somewhere in the arena. Shah reveals his partner. That's Chad Austin, who I mentioned. He gets booed. And of course, big time dream picks here. Chad Austin grabs the mic, says he doesn't want to wrestle. Instead, he offers up his tour bus so he can take fans to Smoky Mountain instead. That's where real wrestling is. The crowd and Joey do not like that one. Austin tries to get Hack to leave too, but Hack looks at him and punches him down and unloads. That dream team is over. Stevie and JT come in. All three take turns beating up Austin. Smith hits the Northern Light suplex and gets the win. Hack then beats up Austin after the bell. This was silly, but I kind of liked it because a match with these four was not going to go anywhere. So instead, you heat up the crowd. This is out of the gate. You get them all revved up to shit on Smoky Mountain. And Chad Austin has kind of been the poster boy for these other shows, right? That's what they're using him for, these other promotions. And he's like the anti-ECW guy. And you embolden those lines of war even more. So yes, maybe it seems a little crazy that they'd be calling out WCW and WWF, but Smoky Mountain's a promotion that they can call out because they're either on their level or bigger, and it's something realistically that maybe could lead somewhere. So I thought that part of it was good. So I went half a star just for the – I liked the gimmick behind it, even though it wasn't really a match, Jenny.
Yeah, you said it. It feels silly, but it's kind of fun the way they lay it out because – It kind of slowly unfolds as a match, like when you're realizing what's happening, because Hack Myers, he picks Austin, and I'm like, I don't know, Hack's pretty over. Austin is really not. Everybody hates him. I like him as a heel more than I like Shane. So, and then Richards is going to pick, you know, babyface as fuck over here, JT Smith. I'm like, this is very odd. What is happening here? Some fuckery is about.
I know the Dream Team thing is like an ECW staple. They do this a lot, like Dream Partner match. But it kind of makes the gimmick look stupid. No one believes these guys pick these other guys. So why not just call it like a mystery partner match where they pick like a randomizer or something? Like that would have made way more sense than acting like Hack Myers actually picked fucking Chad Austin.
Yeah.
You know, or Stevie Richards picked JT Smith. Like, wouldn't you pick Shane Douglas if you get a dream partner to pick or something, or Cactus Jack? Like, why are you picking these guys?
Chad Austin?
It's so stupid. It's like just make it a randomizer thing, or it a commissioner's choice where he put the match together. It's anything. There's a million ways you could have gone about this.
I gotta tell you, I was proud of my growth as a wrestling fan watching this match, because I was a year ago, Jenny would not have noticed this, you know? I would not have thought it was weird at all. So as soon as they started picking their partners, I'm like, wait, this is not right. So I felt happy in my growth. And then I got to watch Hack Myers beat the shit out of Chad Austin, which is so much fun. And they didn't even try to like wrestle each other as tags. They just like beat the shit out of Austin automatically. So it was great. Like, I really like this a lot. I had wrote down 3/4 star, but I think I just talked myself into 1 star.
Yeah, it was a crowd pleaser for to see Hack shaw the shit out of Chad.
Yeah,
that was beautiful. And also, I love Joey flipping out as soon as Chad mentioned Smoky Mountain. Joey's like, I'm going to knock his block off. The Homer Joey, an early ECW hench, fighting for his brand to death. I love it.
Yes, he was much better here. And also, the video looked so much better. I don't know if they upgraded their cameras or something, but it was clear and sharp in a way that I don't think we've seen so far. Usually our episodes are pretty grainy,
yeah,
and rough looking, but this looked really good.
Yeah, you wonder if it's just, I don't know, like the tape was stored somewhere different. Was this, they just got like a master copy versus the other copy? Mm-hmm. Like, who knows where these tapes are all stored?
Maybe they used a SP instead of EP.
That could have been it.
It's a VCR joke from the 80s. That's why I'm a Chad Austin podcast partner. Yes.
Maybe they didn't record over like old movies and shit like I had to. Tapes were such a premium. It's like no one gets it these days what it was like. I was scrounging for those tapes and I couldn't just go buy them.
In
like
the woods, on the side of the road, yes, anywhere obviously. You could look.
Anywhere. Just recording over my dad's old Field of Dreams tapes and everything else he had recorded. All right. all those 50s westerns movies and other shit, but EP, man, you had to do that. You had to cut those commercials, maximize space. It was quite a time, Johnny. And
they don't know what we suffered. They don't know how we suffered.
And then we just started stealing blocks of them from my old company. All right, so opening animation here. We get Joey shit talks Jason. He's only held his title thanks to his stable helping him after winning it in an embarrassing fashion. Jason keeps pushing the envelope despite Todd Gordon's warning about all this interference. Jason and Dean Malenko are backstage. Jason says he'll defend his title. Malenko will accompany him, regardless of Gordon. Jason tucks some cash into Dean's towel, which I thought was funny.
Oh, my God.
And that does bring us to our next match, as Jason defends the TV title against Scorpio. Now, Dean Malenko had that belt when we saw this last. So there's some kind of confusion in the timeline and all this. But Jason.
Well, remember, we said they're sharing her like a threesome.
True.
Right.
But in reality, it's a
little triad.
That's in your head. Jason and Malenko come down. Gordon comes out and issues another warning about Dino. He says, Dean's banned. If they don't comply, Jason's done. Jason bends and sends the shooter away. The Pitbulls then come out. Gordon doubles back. He bans them too. They leave and Jason gives Gordon the business, says to bring out Donnie Allen or Sendoff or Canyon for a match. Gordon then announces the surprise challenger, Too Cold Scorpio. You said you didn't see Sendoff or Canyon in this one, John?
Oh, I want a Dean. Yeah, I want a Dino Sendoff. Definitely am. Big fan.
Donnie Allen.
I wanted Odyssey.
That wouldn't be a job, though. It's like a. You know, there's your dream partner. If you could pick anyone, why are you picking Surfer Ray?
Odyssey.
Scorpio comes running out. He wrecks Jason with clotheslines and some chops and a big splash in the corner. He slams Jason, hits a standing moonsault for two. Scorpio hits a backbreaker, hits to the middle rope for a leg drop. He picks Jason up during the cover. Scorpio, as usual, by the way, that's a Scorpio trope. Scorpio scoops up Jason, puts his his foot knocks down the ref on the way up. Scorpio hits a spinning leg drop, covers, but the ref can't count. Out come the Pit Bulls. The Scorpio meets him with a plancha, comes back in. He slams Jason again, goes up to the top, hits a splash. But again, there's no referee, so Malenko comes in. He works over Scorpio. Scorpio kicks him to the floor. Scorpio goes up top, hits a big splash. And this time the referee counts, and Too Cold Scorpio is the new television champion, ending Jason's reign of terror. I thought this was really well done. I like the teases where Scorpio fights them all off to win the title and end Jason's reign definitively to a big pop. Malenko then beats down Scorpio after the bell, takes the title, and hands it back to Jason. And, you know, you guys obviously listen to my other shows, and I've talked about this quite a bit, whether it's reminiscing about old manias, but there's a bunch of feuds where I feel like the championship reign deserved a better ending. One of the big ones I always point to is John Cena and JBL at WrestleMania 21, where JBL's whole title reign is predicated on the cabinet protecting his title. And always like throwing all kinds of smoke, all kinds of nonsense. They're always running in interference. And yet, in the biggest defense he has at WrestleMania, they leave him to dry. He goes one-on-one and he gets beat in like 9 minutes. So in that match, I wanted all the smoke. I wanted everything. I wanted the cabinet out there. Cena has to battle them all off, fight through them all, and then definitively end the reign. And that's what we get here. Because Jason's whole reign has been predicated on Dean Malenko and the Pitbulls and these guys helping him sneak out these wins. And what happens here is Scorpio has to go through all of them. And he does it with a lot of teases along the way. Just when you think Jason's going to pull that out again because of these guys, Scorpio, you know, they empty the holster, he runs through it all and beats him definitively. And I really like that. I thought it was really, really well done. So I went 2 stars. Obviously not much of a match, but I really like the way they went about him definitively putting an end to this reign by taking out everything that's been carrying Jason this whole time, John.
Yeah, and also, again, like we said in the last episode, it's a good pairing to have Simmons with them, because otherwise Scorpio might be dying a little. I didn't think the reaction was as strong as some of the other titles. Like maybe if Mikey, some of his TV title matches, where the crowd was into it more, but still, I like the Simmons coming to save him at the end, and then the crying Jason promo.
I agree with you about the crowd. Yeah, I mean he got a good pop, but it wasn't a Mikey Whipwreck pop. Just saying. And yeah, that was one of the notes that I made, was like, thank God for Todd Gordon throwing everybody out. And then that also worried me a little bit. I was like, I don't know if I just want to see Jason wrestle without all the other bullshit. So I was glad that they did manage to do it in that sneaky way. And for Scorpio to have to work for those covers after the ref gets knocked out. So yeah, I like this a lot. And I went 2 stars.
Yeah, it was just so, so well done. I think you both nailed the points as well. It's just the way it went about it. It felt like an earned moment for Jason. Mm-hmm. That was the best. I mean, for our Scorpio, that was the best part about it. He really earned it. So we go backstage. That's where Jason and Malenko are. Jason's all broken up. Scorpio took his beloved title. He promises he'll get it back. It belongs to him. It's not the same without it. Malenko promises Jason they'll get it done. And then one of my favorite new Dean Malenko moments I've discovered, he takes his towel and dabs Jason's tear.
Yes.
I was dying.
He's a true friend, Dean Malenko.
It was so great.
Sorry, I couldn't wait. I jumped the gun on that. I'm sorry.
It's okay. He's like, boss, not only are we going to get your title back, I'm going to dab these tears for you.
And he's so stone-faced the whole promo.
It's so good.
And then he just tenderly wipes his face.
You should all get a friend like Dean Malenko.
We should.
All right, back to the ring as Shane Douglas takes on good old Jimmy Powers of WWF fame, former Young Stallion. Big time random matchup. Powers shows up for this match and kind of just follows in this trend we've had of random contenders coming in from around the world of wrestling to take on Shane Douglas. Before the match, we get another good promo from a fired up, angry Ron Simmons. When we come back, Douglas is in control. He hammers away on Powers, kicks up and air falls. Of course, he's mocking Ric Flair during the match. Douglas goes up top. Powers smacks the ropes, and Shane crotches himself and tumbles down. Powers hits a pair of atomic drops and clothesline for two. Powers continues to unload, gets two on a knee lift, gets two on a backslide. He snaps off a DDT for another close near fall. Douglas comes back with an uppercut. Powers tries to go behind, but Douglas ducks down, and Powers clotheslines himself across the top rope. Douglas pounces, covers, and gets the win. I know this is a feisty little match. Jimmy really showed up. And it was cool seeing Douglas take on guys from all over wrestling. Like, I'm still in on that. It pushes his gimmick that he's the franchise. He's the best in the world. These guys come in from all over the place into Philadelphia where he's unbeatable. Douglas takes on the mic, shits on the town while putting over Powers. The crowd chants Flair is gay. buying right in. This is solid. I thought stuff like this works well, where Flair takes, I mean, not Flair. He's basically working the Flair model, but Douglas takes on these random challengers, guys with name value that are beatable coming in here at the back end of the career. So, Jenny, I went 2.25, and I thought Powers had a good look. Like, it seems like a guy ECW would kind of keep around.
Yeah, I really liked Powers in this. I liked him better than Shane in this, who continues to be a disappointment to me. Get your life together, Shane Douglas. The crowd was bored. Like, that's the champion. Like, they didn't get on board until the Flair's gay, whatever the fuck that means, chant. And during the match, they were pretty much silent. So I just feel like, next, I'm done.
But Johnny? Shane's trying to kind of copy Flair, and isn't that how Flair won most of his matches? By getting dominated, yep. and then uh, and then pulling one out of his ass. So
he's basically aping Flair while mocking him. Like, yeah. He's basically being the new Flair, right? Flair was the NWA champion, went to all these different territories. Other challengers from other territories came in to fight him. And yes, he'd always sneak out the win, usually with help of the horsemen or just kind of on his own volition. He's very much doing the Flair model, only without calling other promotions Flair, just call out the other territories.
I am deeply offended by that comparison, and
I won't
stand for it.
A good one that John made.
Not sorry about it.
But Power's looking jacked up here, and I had the long hair, and probably the reason why he couldn't make it in WCW. They were scared that he wouldn't pass a test.
He does end up there eventually. I'm not sure if he sticks around here or not, but he had the profile of a guy Paul would use, like in the upper mid card, a guy that didn't quite get his full due, but is a name value, looking for a run somewhere. So we'll see if he sticks around.
He looked impressive, and Shane gave him a lot of offense.
Yep. Joey narrates highlights of Public Enemy winning the tag titles from Cactus and Mikey Whipwreck in November. Joey gives Mikey props for giving it his all, but the injuries he suffered prevent him from the rematch that he was allowed to then pick his replacement. And next week, we will see that match, Public Enemy versus Cactus Jack and Kevin Sullivan. Paulie Dangerously's backstage talks about the winds of change. It wasn't too long ago that he managed Rick Rude, Austin Idol, Tommy Rich, Steve Austin, Arn Anderson, Bobby Eaton, and he would point to guys like that, like in the Malenkos, and say he would pay money to watch guys like that or try and sign them for the Dangerous Alliance. He has a different vision for the future of wrestling now. It's envisioned to guys like Sabu and Tasmaniac, guys who like victory at all costs and trying to give their fans the money's worth, and they have no equals. He takes a shot at Jason and the Malenkos, thinking they can easily beat Sabu and Taz. Sabu's been through a lot of broken and bruised bones the past 6 weeks, but he's here, and he'll teach the Malenkos a lesson. He talks about how Taz and Grandma Taz came up on the islands. Taz is red hot and out of control, and they'll show the Malenkos that the E in Paulie Dangerously stands for extreme. Johnny, what'd you think?
Yes, I like how the lines are blurred now. Kind of like Paulie's in the face mode here. Pretty much just because of the opponents, the Malenkos are more heelish. Mm-hmm. So. But definitely putting over how extreme Taz and Sabu are.
And the gorgeous word pictures that he paints with the volcano and Taz's grandma is hot. I was digging it.
I picture Grandma Taz as like Granny from Looney Tune Babies or whatever the fuck the little Looney Tunes are.
Really?
Yeah, not Muppet. Muppet Babies. What's the young Looney Tunes? Isn't there like a Looney Tunes?
Tweety's little grandma lady?
Yeah, Looney Granny.
Granny.
There's a version where like the Looney Tunes are like babies, basically, and she like runs this nursery where they all live.
Right,
like,
yeah.
Baby
yeah.
Taz. Anyway, when I heard Grandma Taz, that's what I thought of. Too many children's books for me.
Sounds like too cold during that. Too cold.
Imagine if that's what he did his promo. Dean Malenko. huge tag match. Huge tag match here as Taz and Sabu come together to fight the famous Malenko brothers, Joe and Dean. Sabu and Taz attack at the bell. They beat on them brothers, chucking them around the ring. Sabu has a neck brace on, but it ain't slowing him down. Taz hits Dean with a T-bone. They hit a double flapjack on Joe. Things slip bell outside, all for a brawl, and we head back in where the Malenkos turn the tide with some strikes and some chokes. Sabu kicks Joe to the floor. It's a great somersault senton as Dean works over Taz. Dean hits a seated dropkick to the neck and takes Taz down with a fireman's carry buster. Sabu sets up at a table, and then 911 sets up Joe against it, but he's able to move as Sabu flies off the apron and goes crashing through it. The crowd chants for Sabu as Taz batters Dean with a chair. Taz gets a gut-wrench suplex, but Joe returns, and the Malenkos battle right back. All four continue to brawl until Joe gets chucked outside. Taz puts Dean on his shoulders. Sabu hits a clothesline off the top rope, and Taz follows with a great Tazplex to get the win. Jason then comes in. He kicks down Paul E, but 911 comes out and grabs him. The Pitbulls come in. They make the save, but 911 kills them with a double chokeslam. Everyone brawls around the ring as things get wild. Public Enemy comes out now. They attack Sabu as the Malenkos beat down Taz and stretch him out. Sabu gets a moonsault to wipe out Public Enemy and then hits a springboard moonsault on Johnny Grunge, but then they eat knees when he tries one on Rock a Rock. Public Enemy has a double stuffed pile driver on Sabu, and then Deck Paul as the Malenkos have Taz tied up. Public Enemy set up a table in the ring. They put Paulie on it, and Rocco puts him through with a moonsault to a huge pop. Rocco clotheslines Sabu across the top rope, and then Public Enemy sets up another table. They put Sabu on it, and Rock moonsaults him through it as the Malenkos hold Taz there and force him to watch it. Taz breaks free and cleans house and surveys the carnage of Sabu and Paul, and this was an amazing post-match segment to close out this show. The match itself was fun. It was wild brawling, nice clash of styles with the Malenkos trying to ground them. Good win for a new super team that's really come together quickly in Sabu and Taz, and the post-match is just tremendous. Everyone in this thing got over. The Malenkos look great. Taz and Sabu look great. Public Enemy look great. Paul takes a nasty bump. 911's wrecking shit. The poor Pitbulls get choke slammed. but they're at least involved. So I went 2 3/4, John, on the match, and then I really loved this post-match stuff.
An awesome fuckfest, the whole thing. From the beginning, I love how they managed to work Malenko's towel into everything. This time they had like Sabu choking him with his own towel. Dean's towel gets a lot of play in every match and promo, no matter what. I love it. And Rocco was a tremendous post match. Moonsault and Paul Lee. It's still kind of special when you see Paul Lee get fucked up.
Yep.
And also the drive by on Sabu and Joey was great. He got over how it was like the worst diss of Sabu's career to get put through a table, like only Sabu could put people through tables. So for somebody else to do it to him, it's a tremendous diss. And also from the fans' perspective, you caught that front row schmuck in with the neck brace to honor Sabu. He had Sabu written on it, right in one of the guys next to the straw hats. A nice tribute.
Oh my God, that was my most favorite double choke slam that I've ever seen. 911 do on the pit bulls. That was awesome. And wow, this was fucking wild and crazy. Sabu in his hot pink pants. I love him and Taz together. This is awesome for me. And Rocco and Johnny Grunge have a different edge when they have their belts, I think. I think they step it up a little bit with the confidence from winning their belts back. So all this was fantastic.
So you think more so three than stars. You like them as champions versus chasing them?
Yeah, I do. I think I do. Because they feel a little bit desperate the other way. And now they're just like, big dick swinging, you know, everywhere. So it's good shit.
What'd you think of Joey?
Oh my God, he was awesome. He was going fucking ape shit. Yeah, he was nuts.
And what do you think of
Joe? He ended it. He said, Public Enemy has committed a capital crime. that was a good line at the end.
And what do you think of Joe Malenko?
I mean, who? I don't give a fuck about Joe Malenko, but he did all right.
Yeah,
took some good bumps.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a great wrestler, him and Dean, of course, are the.
Yeah, he didn't get much in. He was pretty much there to take the bumps. And
also, they did a good job with isolating Taz there so that, Paulie and everybody could get their ass kicked.
Well, and
they teased they teased 9-1-1 grabbing Jason, and you thought we were going to see a big slow. But then the Pits saved them. And so instead, 9-1-1 double choke the Pits. That was a good spot.
A good blending of storylines in this one chaotic.
Everything's mixed in. And they do a good job with. The Malenkos are believable shooters, right? They've established Dean that we know, basically by unison or, teamwork, them being a team, basically association, that Joe's a nasty shooter as well. So it's believable to have them trap Taz in that hold and keep him pinned there.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
I need Roger to do that laugh.
All right, that's the end of the show. Let's do some awards. Best match to me, easily Taz and Sabu versus the Great Malenkos.
Yes, sir.
Worst match was that big dream tag at the opening of the show.
The Shah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the dream partner, Chad Austin. Yeah.
All right, best moment I had two, Scorpio beating Jason, and then the post-match fuckfest of the main event there.
Yeah, Rocco moonsault and Paul Lee through the table.
Yeah, Paulie's moonsault bump.
Most 90s, I want Jim Powers. Just Jim Powers.
Yeah, the hair and everything. The hair and the musculature, the extra musculature. Yeah.
Oh, I had Ron Simmons' a spangly vest during his promo.
Yeah, that's a good one. Rising, Scorpio, Malenko, Paul, Sabu, Taz, Public Enemy all had a great show tonight.
Definitely PE. Definitely PE. Yeah.
Who'd you say, Jenny? Joey?
Joey, yeah.
Yeah, he was good too. Stop falling, I just went poor Chad Austin.
Fuck you, Chad Austin.
Bum. All right. Final grade tonight. I thought this was just as good as our first show. I went 7 out of 10 again.
Me too.
Yeah, 7.5.
Right.
That ending, and then to see that on a weekly show, that was very special. That whole slob fest.
So we had a pretty hot night of television, I'll say.
Yeah, we did. I enjoyed it.
All three of these episodes were very, very good. And especially, I mean, I think if we hadn't seen November, November, we would have been even higher on those other two. I think probably a little bit of that leaked in knowing we had already seen it and just kind of buzzed through. So, I mean, they're really starting to find a groove. And it's fitting because we're about a year in. You know, it was last November where things really shifted for this promotion, where Eddie Gilbert left and they took the next step into what they would eventually become. And now here we are a year later, November, remember, again, kind of a linchpin show for them. So we'll see how things elevate as we head toward 95. So hopefully everyone enjoyed this episode of the Extreme Three-Way Dance. We'll be back in a couple weeks. We have three more episodes that'll get us into December. And then we'll have a special treat after that. We're going to head back in the vault a little bit for a special little episode 20 treat for everyone. But we'll touch on that in our next one. Jenny, anything you want to plug before we wrap up?
Yeah, I was on an AEW reaction show on Place Finishing Wrestling, and Tim Capel and Nate Milton and Sean Kidd were on that show, and it was a disaster. But yes, it was very fun, so listen to that. Also, an episode of Freak Out Drive-In's coming up with yours truly, John D'Amato, where we watched Carrie.
Yes.
Is that about King of Queens?
No. Oh. It's about tampons.
Make sure you tune in right away because you know the first scene has
some good
70s stuff in it.
Also, I can be found on Twitter at Jenny Position, and the Facebook page is The Jenny Position.
All right. Very good. Johnny?
1980 old cast is out there. The forthcoming Freak Out Drive-In, as mentioned by Les Jenny Position.
A little bit of the Jenny.
That's about it for now.
All right, very good. As far as me, there'll be a new Place to Be podcast next Monday. Scott Criscuolo and I will be joined by a very special guest to look at the SummerSlam Fever special, heading into SummerSlam 90. And then as well, Jenny on that Jenny Position feed, you can hear a brand new The Journey Through Infinity that dropped this past week, and that was Captain America, the first Avenger. It's me, you, Scott, and Tim Cable. And then right here on the North-South Connection podcast feed, this will be a lot coming at you. We're still working through the kinks of the schedule, but in the coming weeks, we'll have a new Wrestling War Zone, we'll have a new Noah Bard, and more of this show here. So just stay tuned, spread the word. We really appreciate it. As you subscribe in iTunes, rate us as well, and just keep posting around to let everyone know about this great new wonderful podcast feed that's available to each of you. So thanks to everyone who found us here tonight. Thanks to everyone who's listened. Continue to stay extreme. Continue to engage in a menage a trois of violence. And we'll talk to you soon. Take care.
Yes, sir.